T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, Health Matters, presented by SSM Health. Here's your host, KMOX Health Editor, Fred Bottomer.
Hi there. Thanks a lot for joining me today. Really do appreciate it. Hope you're having a great weekend. Lots to talk about today, including a look at a remdesivir trial in children with COVID-19. We'll also find out about the latest research on pregnant women and coronavirus. Plus, we'll check in with a local clinic to see how they're faring these days. But first, let's get started the way we always do with our co-host, Dr. Fred Buchhold. Dr. Buchhold is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchhold, thanks for joining us again.
Always my pleasure.
We've heard some discouraging news this past week, especially about the increase in coronavirus cases in the St. Louis area. This is Dr. Alexander Garza, the head of the St. Louis Metropolitan Pandemic Task Force, on Wednesday.
Our numbers are on the rise again, which is always concerning. So we continue to see a trend in the upward direction, and that's absolutely what we don't want to see. So this, what this translates into is that we have some accelerated transmission of the virus in the community, and then we have to do everything now to slow that down. Now, we know we're not going to eliminate spread until we have vaccine, but by each of us doing our part, wearing masks, staying 6 feet away from each other, we can keep the economy open and we can prevent others from getting sick. And so as you can see, the curve continues to bend upwards, which is what we don't want to see.
How concerned are you, Dr. Buchhold, about this upward trend?
Very. I think you're starting to see that with those numbers. Not only are you seeing an increase in the numbers of COVID and the case rates, is the number of hospitalizations has started to kind of trend upwards as well. And so that's kind of, to me, that's the biggest kind of indicator of, you know, what's the impact on the community. And again, remember in New York, remember in Seattle, now look at Florida, look at Arizona, look at Texas. It's not so much the case as this talk of, you know, it's mostly young people getting sick or we're testing more. None of that really matters more so than the hospitalization rates, because where things kind of, you know, devolve in these epicenters is when the hospitals get full and get overwhelmed. And, I just talked to a former resident of mine who was in New York City in the last year. He just joined our faculty here. This is an advanced, very highly trained, very specialized human being that basically was just drafted, and just, you know, the day-to-day work wasn't bad, but just the intensity of it was just overwhelming. And I think that's what should be on all of our minds with this. And I think the other interesting thing is nationally is the testing rates are going up, and that's been kind of an argument for and more cases. But the percentage of people that test positive is also doubled, which means that probably there's a lot more people out there still that aren't tested that are probably carrying this disease and are asymptomatic carriers. So it's alarming. And, you know, I think where our hospital numbers go from here is really, I think, the other number to pay real close attention to.
What's driving this increase, do you think?
Well, I think it's what everybody's done. I mean, we went on this lockdown back in March. You know, we try to be diligent about, I think everybody was concerned and worried and diligent about trying to prevent the spread of this. And then, you know, we've kind of rolled that back. And despite policies being in place, they're essentially unenforceable. And I think a lot of people have thrown, or I should say, have been less cautious. And then, you know, it just, you know, it, it, it's not so much the day-to-day everybody being around that spreads this. It seems to be like these kind of focal points where it just kind of explodes out of somewhere. And it just takes a couple of those to happen. And then those people that are in that particular area go somewhere else. And that's how the spread occurs. And so I think we've lost that discipline a little bit, which is to be fair, completely natural when there's no things in place to force us to do something different. I think some complacency came in, and I'm guilty of that too. So it's not like I'm trying to blame anybody for that. And you know, I think the desire to get things back to normal, when I think we've got to realize that this normalcy that we had, say, in December of last year, I don't think is anything we should expect to have, at least for a while, even when we get a vaccine. And that's just my own prediction. That's not me as a healthcare expert, but I think this is a new normal. I think we're just starting to scratch the surface of how it's going to affect our lives in the next couple of years, economically, socially, and everything else.
Are you seeing an increase in patients with coronavirus symptoms at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital?
Yeah, so I've been on service the last couple of weeks, since last week, I should say. And when I walked in the first day, I think in the hospital we had 3 total cases. By Friday we had, I think, 16. And that number has kind of stabilized since then, so it hasn't really changed substantially since then. But it certainly went up, and that got our attention. You know, even still, it's kind of frustrating. I mean, we still don't have the equipment and supplies to really test everybody. We still have to ration our personal protective equipment still, you know, kind of in preparation more so than we're being short now. But we're just trying to make sure we have enough should we have a spike. But there's probably people come through our healthcare system, you know, across the St. Louis region that we'd like to test and probably can't just because our supplies still are somewhat limited. And so that always to me is the most concerning thing with that.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, tell me about some of the patients with COVID-19 that you treated in this past week.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I've been talking a lot with my colleagues about this too, because, you know, we've chatted over the course of the last month or two about some different studies and drugs that have come out. So, you know, our organization, our hospital is participating in a trial that used a drug called remdesivir, which is an antiviral agent that showed it reduces hospitalizations by about 4 days, from about 15 to 11 days. And then, you know, we've also talked about this idea of dexamethasone, which is a pretty common steroid in low doses given to patients, and it improves mortality if they require oxygen. Well, I should say it improves mortality if you have COVID and you're hospitalized. There seems to be a bigger effect, particularly if they're in the ICU or on oxygen. So, you know, I took care of 5 patients in the last 10 days, and, you know, once we recognized or suspected it, I mean, we hit them pretty hard quickly. So very aggressively got them on those steroids, got them on remdesivir. A couple of them I gave convalescent plasma to, and they were all sick. They were all on oxygen. A couple I was worried that would go to the ICU. They all got better, like markedly better within 72 hours, which is really encouraging. Again, small number of people, but, you know, I joked. I walked into one patient's room, and I didn't even recognize the person on the third day. I thought I was in the wrong room, and I was pretty stunning. I mean, in talking to my colleagues in the ICU, we kind of feel like we have some tactics, like we have a playbook on how to deal with this. We know how to be aggressive and what to be aggressive with, and I think that's a really important clue. You know, if you're out in the community and you feel you're sick, I don't think this playbook works. This is for the really sick patients, and that's where it really shows have effect. If you're not sick enough to be hospitalized, there's actually some concern of harm with these drugs, so I want to be very, very careful. And in remdesivir, for instance, one of my patients developed liver lab abnormalities with her liver, so I, you know, these aren't innocent drugs, so you got to be very, very careful and know what you're doing. But I was kind of stunned. You know, I've been telling everybody I've seen, of just like, you know, pretty predictably you can see that. And what I always talk with medicine, what you're paying somebody like me for a well-trained physician that takes care of sick people is kind of the, you know, what an experience and knowledge of how people are going to do as they go through the course of their treatment, and kind of to get a prediction of that. And so I'm starting to get, and we're starting to get as a community, some confidence about, you know, how to kind of delineate sick versus not sick and how to be aggressive. And that comfort with the tactics of dealing with this that we're developing, I think, is really, really important and helpful. So it's a sign of optimism and kind of this whole sea of dread that we're surrounded by. And you'd like people not to get sick in the first place, but at least some people, we have a playbook that seems to have some effect. And that's really, you know, a credit to our community of how quickly we've gotten this information and applied it. And I'm really encouraged by that.
Dr. Buchholz, we're hearing some patients saying they had coronavirus, got better, and now they have it again. Is it possible to get infected twice? What do we know?
Well, let me say nobody knows for sure. It seems unlikely, but that doesn't mean it's not impossible. I will say a lot of patients that have viral infections, and particularly serious viral infections, can kind of sometimes have lingering or kind of reactivated of symptoms related to that are probably mediated by the immune system. So, you know, a common one is infectious mononucleosis or mono. So, you know, a lot of people have that when they're younger in their teenage years. And they recover initially from that, but then have kind of long-term secondary complications from that chronic fatigue or tiredness that can last for a long time afterwards. So, you know, these are what we call kind of post-viral syndromes. I see it more and more in my practice, and I'm not surprised by that. And the fact that people have kind of a lingering or difficult time fully recovering or have these windows of feeling well and then not feeling well is not a massive surprise to me. But we don't know if that's a reinfection or not. I suspect it's not, but that's based on a guess, not by any science or data that I'm aware of.
Dr. Buchholz, thanks a lot for your time today. Really appreciate it. Anything else you want to add?
No, just keep, you know, just follow these rules, please, and just be smart. You know, we're before this curve. We can, as a community, we can, you know, certainly avoid the fate of our friends and colleagues and loved ones in other states. And just let's be smart. Let's be smart as a community. And I really ask everybody to do that.
Dr. Buchholz, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Coming up, we'll find out about a new trial for children with COVID-19 involving the drug remdesivir. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Children with COVID-19 are being enrolled in what's called a promising new trial involving the drug remdesivir. Here to talk with us about that is Dr. Rachel Charney. Dr. Charney is a SLU Care Pediatrics Emergency Medicine Physician at SSM Health Cardinal Glennon Children's Hospital. Dr. Charney, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about this study of remdesivir in children.
Well, remdesivir is a medication. It's what's called a broad-spectrum antiviral, so it's medication against many viruses that has been shown to be promising in adults. And now the company is trying to see if it is also useful in children.
So how many kids are being tested and in how many sites?
Well, there's going to be 30 total sites across the United States and Europe, and it appears that each site's going to be enrolling about 50 patients.
And how is this study being done?
Well, this is what they call a single-arm study, which means that all the children enrolled will get remdesivir, and then they're going to look to see if the children are tolerating the medicine, what the kinetics are, which means how the medicine works within a child's body, and also how efficacious or useful the medication is.
Dr. Charney, can you remind us once again about the results of the remdesivir trial in adults with COVID-19?
What we're finding in adults is that remdesivir decreases the time to recovery.
And are you anticipating similar results in children?
I think we anticipate similar results. Remdesivir has been used in children throughout the spring in what's called compassionate use, which means that it could be requested on kids who are severely ill. And I have not heard up to this point of any particular concerns in its use in children. But until we study it, it's hard to tell whether that's actually going to be the case.
How does remdesivir work, and what does it do when it comes to COVID-19?
Well, as I said, it's a broad-spectrum antiviral, which means it is a medicine sort of like an antibiotic attacks bacteria. An antiviral helps decrease viral production in the body.
Since a child's body is not just a smaller version of an adult's body, what sort of extra concerns are there when it comes to testing a medication on kids with COVID-19?
Well, there's always a lot of regulation about doing any studies in children, and I would assume that Gilead has gone through the same level of work to make sure that the children being enrolled in these studies are being protected and monitored carefully.
What are the goals in this study?
The goals are to determine whether or not remdesivir is a useful medication for children who do get moderate to severe COVID.
We're talking with Dr. Rachel Charney. Dr. Charney is a SLU Care Pediatric Emergency Medicine Physician at SSM Health Cardinal Glenn and Children's Hospital. Dr. Charney, let's talk about kids and COVID-19 in general. Remind us of what the risks are.
So COVID-19, though we don't see it as much in children, it is a disease that can impact children, both in the immediate time frame when they get COVID, as well as some children getting what appears to be a post-COVID inflammatory illness as well that we've been hearing about.
What about symptoms for kids? Are they the same as symptoms for adults?
The symptoms are generally the same. As with COVID, we're finding more and more symptoms that COVID can present with, but there are a lot more children than adults who will present what's called asymptomatically or without any symptoms as well.
And what are some of the severe complications that you're seeing?
Well, most of the severe complications that we're seeing are in the children who have the post-COVID inflammatory syndrome. And again, we're not certain that this is COVID-related, but there does seem to be a relationship between what's called multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children and prior COVID-19 infection. These children can present in shock or even with cardiac injury.
What should parents be on the lookout for?
As with any illness, you want to be keeping an eye out for a child who's not acting well. So a child who's got a persistent fever, who is not behaving like you would expect or recovering the way you would expect from a regular illness. And for COVID, it's important to notice whether or not the child's been around anyone who's had COVID, because that increases their odds of also having it.
Dr. Charney, both St. Louis City and St. Louis County are now under a mandatory mask order when you go out into public places. What's your thinking on that when it comes to children?
I think that the literature so far seems to suggest that masking in everyone who's able to tolerate it and use it properly can help decrease the spread of COVID.
Do you have any age recommendation?
The CDC and the AAP don't recommend masks in children under the age of 2. And in most cases, there are recommendations from ages 3 and up to try and use masking if it's being worn properly and tolerated.
Dr. Charney, COVID-19 is scary for all of us, especially for parents with kids. What can you tell them?
What I would say is that in general, kids are doing very, very well, even when they do contract COVID and even when they do contract MISC or the multi-system inflammatory syndrome. While that doesn't mean that every child's going to do well, parents can rest for the most part comfortably knowing that most children will do well. That doesn't mean that we don't want to protect them. That doesn't mean that we don't want to decrease the spread, because these are very important things for our entire community right now. But that is important information for parents to know.
And there's no longer need to fear that they might pick up something if they take their child to the hospital, the ER, or their doctor's office?
There's never any way of guaranteeing any location isn't going to have someone who's spreading COVID, regardless of the precautions that we put into place. But all the hospitals and doctor's offices are doing everything they can to make that risk as small as possible.
Dr. Charney, thanks a lot for your time. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Dr. Rachel Charney is a SLU Care Pediatric Emergency Medicine Physician at SSM Health Cardinal Glenn and Children's Hospital. Coming up, we'll find out about some new research on pregnant women and coronavirus. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Thanks a lot for joining us. You know, we're learning something new every day about coronavirus and COVID-19. Up until this point, we didn't know much about how the virus affects pregnant women. Now there's new research that gives us a glimpse into what it might be doing. Here to talk with us about that is Dr. Guy Venezia. Dr. Venezia is an OBGYN at SSM Health St. Clair Hospital in Fenton. He also oversees the clinical program for women and children at SSM Health. Dr. Venezia, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me, Fred. It's always good to talk to you.
Thanks, you too. So what's this latest research finding for pregnant women and coronavirus?
Yeah, it's a little bit complicated with a twist, and the data's coming in so quickly, and our learning curve is so steep that it's hard for patients, physicians, and nurses to navigate all the information. So I think the important points, one, just to put out a positive note, the coronavirus or COVID-19 does not seem to have a significant impact on pregnancy as some of the other respiratory infections that we've seen in the past. So historically, respiratory infections have increased the risk for severe morbidity and mortality in women. And so we can go back and look at like the swine flu, H1N1, and the SARS, and it significantly impacted our pregnant patients. Some of the new data that has recently come out does put a twist on that. So we know that COVID-19, the infection rate for pregnant patients is similar to the general population in the same age range. But the new data that came out of the CDC and some of the information coming from the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology shows that there is a slight increase in certain manifestations with COVID. And so I'd really like your audience and patients, and especially pregnant women, to know that there's a slight increased risk in both ICU admissions and mechanical ventilation. But again, important to note that there's no increased risk for death.
Yeah, so it says 31% of pregnant women were hospitalized compared to 6% of non-pregnant women were hospitalized. But it's hard to distinguish in these numbers whether these women were hospitalized because of pregnancy issues or because of coronavirus.
Yeah, it's very important to filter through those numbers. And there's some more data that came out from the British Medical Journal, the BMJ, that did a very wide study of hospital admissions. And we've compared those to SSM, BJC, and Mercy, because, you know, we have the pandemic task force. And some of those numbers relate to about 5 out of 1,000 admissions. So we're still at, about 0.4-0.5% of admissions. In the St. Louis region, we've been pretty stable. We've seen a slight uptick in hospitalizations for pregnant patients, but our numbers remain really low. It's only about 6% admitted that are COVID positive. About 2% of those get admitted already positive, and only about 3% go to the ICU. But again, our positive message to the pregnant patients is that our pregnant patients are isolated. They are taken care of in an area that doesn't increase the risk from other patients, and we still encourage the normal labor and delivery and breastfeeding and care of the baby. One other note, Fred, that I think is really important because a lot of moms ask us this, we do not seem to see a very high transmission rate or vertical transmission rate to the baby. There are some few cases out there, but the risk to the baby is very low. And as you know, people under 20 and newborns do very well with COVID, so the risk is very small.
And as you said, the fatality rate for both pregnant and non-pregnant women with COVID is still just 0.2%.
Yes, and we have not seen any maternal deaths in the St. Louis region. And again, that comes from the pandemic task force, the St. Louis pandemic task force, through BJC, Mercy, and SSM. Our numbers remain really low for morbidity, and we have not seen any mortality or maternal deaths at this point.
We're talking with Dr. Guy Venezia. He's an OBGYN for SSM Health, St. Clair Hospital in Fenton. He also oversees the clinical program for women and children at SSM Health. Dr. Venezia, you said that the risk of transmitting the virus from pregnant mom to child is very low. What about the risk of infection from breast milk?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we work closely in the clinical program with Cardinal Glennon and the neonatologists. And so their recommendation, along with the American Academy of Pediatrics, is to continue to breastfeed. Originally, when we were learning a lot about the COVID, we were concerned about that transmission. And so initially we separated. But breast milk and amniotic fluid show little to no evidence of the virus. And the importance of breast milk and what it provides continues to give the recommendation that they should breastfeed. So right now, minimal risk with breastfeeding, and we are no longer separating mom and babe. We do still recommend the regular social distancing in that third trimester, because that's when the highest risk of infection is for moms. And then once they're admitted to the hospital, we keep them in the same room. We encourage breast milk and normal hand hygiene and masks to prevent infection.
Any increased risk for certain racial or ethnic groups of pregnant women?
Yeah, Fred, I'm so glad you brought that up. It was something from the BMJ, the British Medical Journal, that I did want to bring to the audience and our patients, is there is a disparity with Black and ethnic groups. So over 50% of the patients admitted in the BMJ journal were of Black or ethnic background. So the minorities, not only in St. Louis we've seen, but across the world and certainly in New York and now in Britain, show that there is a significant increased risk in minority groups. So we've asked the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology and other organizations to spend more research dollars on that to better understand it. So that is a risk. And then one other risk that's really important, and this is the general population, but even more so in pregnant patients with a slight increase in manifestations for pregnant patients, and that would be comorbidity. So overweight, obesity, hypertension, some of those other comorbidities that a pregnant patient might have will increase her risk with a COVID-19.
Is there an increased risk for C-sections or preterm birth in a mom that's COVID positive?
Well, interestingly, we have seen some increase in the risk of preterm birth. And so accordingly, some of our management for contractions and treatment, we do jump on that sooner, and we are asking those questions. In regards to C-section, because there is a minimal to no vertical transmission from mom to baby in utero, we haven't certainly recommended C-sections, a normal vaginal birth, but we do take precautions. So when you come in as a mom, we will try to get you to have an early epidural, get the pain under control, so that in case there's any emergency or any unforeseen medical indications, we can do a C-section and decrease your risk from intubation and respiratory and aerosolization of the virus. But to answer your question, we do see a slight increased risk for preterm birth or prematurity, but it hasn't impacted our C-section rate.
Are the symptoms of COVID-19 different in pregnant women?
No, they're really not. We do know that with pregnancy, you have a higher risk with respiratory manifestations, as we previously mentioned. And we've seen with like just the regular flu or influenza, H1N1, the swine flu or SARS. But the symptoms that we look for when a patient comes in are the same as the general population. And the primary symptoms would be fever, fatigue, cough. Those are the things that really give the early warning signs of a respiratory infection or COVID-19.
And Dr. Venezia, once again, go over the precautions that pregnant women and all of us should take.
Yeah, I think it's very, very important for the social distancing and even isolation. So if a patient's scheduled to come in for a C-section and we know that at 37, 38 weeks, the increased risk for labor is there. So we start warning our patients early at 36, 37 weeks to start social distancing even more and even consider isolating at home during that last week or two. The third trimester is the highest risk for contracting the COVID-19. And certainly a patient who comes in with no symptoms or is able to avoid any virus is going to have a much better labor, C-section, and delivery and decrease the risk significantly to their baby. So hand hygiene, masks, social distancing, even isolation before C-sections or labor, we would highly recommend.
Anything else you want to add, Dr. Venezia?
No, I just want to encourage you and the audience there for taking such an active role and appreciate your care and concern for our pregnant moms. And then for the pregnant patients out there, to know that when they come in, all the standards, protocols have been put in place. You will be protected and isolated. And we are not seeing a significant increased risk in our labor units or birthing suites. So the whole idea of coming into the hospital and being at risk is very minimal, and we provide a very safe environment at SSM Health.
Dr. Venezia, thanks so much for your time again. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Fred. I really appreciate it.
Dr. Guy Venezia is an OBGYN at SSM Health St. Clair Hospital in Fenton. He also oversees the clinical program for women and children at SSM Health. Coming up on Health Matters, we'll find out about a special recognition for a holistic primary care facility at SSM Health St. Mary's Hospital. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on KMOX.
Now, back to Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. A big honor for the Internal Medicine Clinic at SSM Health St. Mary's Hospital. Here to talk with us about that is Dr. Helen Kornblum. Dr. Kornblum is the Medical Director for the Internal Medicine Clinic at St. Mary's. Dr. Kornblum, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. It's an honor to be here.
So explain to me, what is this new recognition?
So the recognition is primarily a recognition by the federal government that we are a medical health home, which primarily means that we provide a multidisciplinary approach to holistic patient care in our clinic. We've been doing that since I've been here and feel very passionate about it as our patients become our family. But now it's officially recognized by the government, so it's a nice thing to have.
What is meant by holistic medicine?
It means that we treat the whole person, not just the disease. We have a multidisciplinary team, so this has really been a team effort. The requirements and standards that needed to be met were quite stringent. But I have a tremendous team of staff with a social worker, pharmacist, PharmD, pharm students, a nurse, a medical assistant, and an office coordinator, as well as a case manager. And we really work together as a team to treat the entire patient, including their socioeconomic issues, their health issues, access to health care, access to medications. And with the support of SSM, we're able to provide really high-quality care to patients that are mostly uninsured or underinsured.
So what type of cases do you see?
We see a variety of cases. Most of our patients are from the poorer communities in St. Louis, not all of them, but we reach out to those specifically so that they have access to high-quality, high-value care. We see, of course, diabetes, hypertension, a variety of infectious diseases, including HIV, and those would be our primary diagnoses, in addition to other diseases of multiple organ systems.
So explain to me, how would you deal in a holistic way with someone that comes in with maybe high blood pressure problems?
So, for example, a patient would have some hypertension, essential hypertension, with the need to take multiple medications. So our pharmacist would talk with her about the medications and the schedule she's taking and assure that she has access to getting all of her medicines because of cost. We have a close relationship with our pharmacy across the street, with Clayton Health Services, that helps us with our patients that don't have insurance so that they can get medications at a reduced cost. And then we make sure they have it, that they understand what it's for, and that they're taking it. In addition, our social worker will make sure that they have access to healthy foods, which is a challenge. We even developed our own food pantry in the clinic, in my office in the clinics, to assure that our patients have the food that they need. But it's a challenge. We discuss healthy eating and no salt and so forth in relationship to hypertension, in addition to stress management, which has been a profound issue during this current pandemic. This is really with a focus of wellness, not just of the blood pressure, but of the mind, the body, and spirit, which all contribute to the simple reading that we get in the office.
We're talking with Dr. Helen Kornblum. Dr. Kornblum is the medical director for the Internal Medicine Clinic at SSM Health St. Mary's Hospital. How big is the need, Dr. Kornblum, for this type of clinic?
The need is tremendous. We have my nurse manager, Becky, will get 5, 6 to 10 requests for admissions to our clinic daily, which we screen because we want to be able to assure that we can provide the care that they need. So we will see them, and we're also a teaching clinic. So we're a residency program here at St. Mary's, where I actually trained and loved my rotation in the clinic so much I couldn't wait to come back. So we have to consider all of the issues within the training of the residents as well. So can we meet the patient's needs? Can we utilize the teaching for the residents? And, of course, our patients are our best teachers. And can we provide everything that they need? So the need is infinite in St. Louis, and we hope to actually get back out into the community and reach out to more who really don't understand or don't know that they have access to this care.
Yeah, I guess I've got a question about that. How would a patient know if they need to go to the internal medicine clinic at St. Mary's?
Yeah, that's a great question. Most of our patients come from the hospital after they were admitted for an acute condition that could have otherwise been prevented. And, you know, as you know, healthcare is pivoting towards more prevention and keeping patients out of the hospital, and that's really what our focus is on in the clinic. So most of our patients come because they're admitted with a new-onset diabetes that they didn't know they had, or hypertension, or some other conditions, congestive heart failure, that was left undiagnosed and thus untreated. And then we will see them initially just for follow-up to make sure that they have everything they need, and then screen them, and then they come as a patient to the clinic. So that would be our primary source. How do we reach out to those that don't know? That's a challenge. And in the last couple of years, we have really revved up our outreach programs and trying to get into the communities and educate regarding preventative health and health maintenance and keeping people well rather than treating disease.
Dr. Kornblum, you mentioned earlier about how this is a tough time with coronavirus all around. How has your clinic been dealing with that?
Well, it's interesting. While many offices had to close because of COVID-19, we actually did quite the opposite and started to reach out to our patients and let them know that we're here for them, and called each and every one of them, actually, and assured that they were okay and staying well and understood what they needed to do as far as social distancing and protecting themselves. And also not falling through, not allowing other disease processes to fall through the cracks. Everybody was very hyper-focused on COVID-19, which was, of course, a very big deal, obviously. But really, there still exists hypertension and heart failure and infectious disease, other infectious diseases and diabetes that requires follow-up and care. And so we really focused on that. We revved up our ability to do telehealth visiting with our patients via Zoom, and our IT department was great in helping us get that going, and that will actually help to accentuate the care that we provide. It doesn't replace face-to-face, because I still think you can't underestimate the power of touch, but it is great that we can touch bases with our patients via telehealth. And see them more frequently and assure that they have everything they need.
Dr. Kornblum, anything else you want to add? What do you want people to know?
I want people to know that if you're healthy and well, it's a really great thing. And that is our goal, is to keep people out of the hospital, to treat people rather than disease. And everybody deserves that opportunity to be listened to and treated as a human being and cared for. I think we need more of that in this world.
Dr. Kornblum, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Dr. Helen Kornblum is the medical director for the Internal Medicine Clinic at SSM Health St. Mary's Hospital. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. If there are parts of this show you want to hear again, please log on to KMOX.com and look under the podcast section. Or you can download the radio.com app and favorite KMOX. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Please join us again next week at the same time for another edition of Health Matters, presented by SSM Health on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.